are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
You are. Yes, you are.
You are.
You are.
You are.
And you are Paul Strolley.
I am Paul Strolley.
And who
you
am I?
Are that dazzling, hypnotic stud, Michael Sterling.
Really?
That is you.
Stud?
You
yes. Use that?
It's been a while, Michael. I'm just a very lonely man. I'm very lonely.
Really?
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I was telling you last night, I was traversing out to Malibu. Oh. And to see the opening of Helen, Euripides.
Yes, yes, the one that that Maxwell Caulfield talked
right.
about on our last show.
At the beautiful Getty Villa.
Yes.
Spectacular setting. And the whole point of my actually mentioning that to you and to our guests as well when we were speaking in the lobby is that I said it was humid on my way into the studio today. And last night, the theater wrote me a little note and said, don't forget to bring a blanket or a heavy coat. It's freezing at night here.
Really? And so was it?
I wasn't the only one that received that note. And everybody in the audience had these things with them, and it was just deadly humid there by the ocean.
So everyone
I was in a suit to begin with, and then right. I brought a winter cashmere coat on top of it.
Okay, wait, let me see if I get this right.
Yeah.
You went to Malibu to see a play.
Yes.
You were wearing a suit with a winter cashmere coat.
Well, they said.
You are a fop, Mr. Shirley. You know that? You are a fop.
Bring a coat. I looked good, but I was sweating to beat the bejesus.
Yeah. So, looked good, but sweating like the proverbial.
It was your own personal marine layer.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
But I donned the coat quickly.
You donned or doffed?
Donned is on.
Oh,
sorry, then I doffed.
You donned or doffed?
You
know. Unless they caught you at it.
Yeah, right.
Yes. We'd like to think.
I was in the restroom
like
at the time.
This is heading. I don't like where this is heading.
I don't either.
Am I at the right show?
We'd like to thank.
Unfortunately, yes.
I'll get on track here. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
In studio today, we're delighted to have two of LA's most dynamic young stars. Our first guest is a writer, composer, singer, and an accomplished Los Angeles Ovation Award-nominated actor. Brett Rybak is with us in the studio.
Hey, Brett.
Where did all those people come from?
You got a parade.
Well, you brought them.
I know, I paid them. It's true.
And we also have with us, Paul, another celebrated actor who's currently burning it up on stage in the pulsating drama The Paris Letter at the Distinguished Group Repertory Theater in North Hollywood. Dan Sykes is here.
Hello, Dan. I was so nervous I was going to get crickets just then. Right after that.
I was going to say I didn't pay them to do that.
No. We don't have crickets, but I could have done this.
It might have been more fitting.
That's all I got, though. That's all I got. Actually, you know what? I'll save. I got a nice one in the bank. I'll keep you for when we talk to you later. We'll give you a nice intro.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
So, no, no.
You're looking at me with that judgmental glint.
No, not...
You know you have a judgmental glint?
It's the glasses.
Oh, worry. Right. A little penicillin will clear it right up.
Oh, thank you. Again?
Yeah.
All right.
You wear glasses well.
My
eyes went south a couple of years ago because everyone said, I said, I got great vision. They said, are you 45 yet? And I said, no. I said, wait. And then on the morning of my 45th birthday, like clockwork, I needed like a German Shepherd.
Really?
I was just
really?
Like went south instantly. Yeah. All of a sudden blurry, needed bifocals. Never glasses in my whole life. Bifocals at 45.
Well, you know, the amount of time that we both spend in front of a computer, which I'm sure you always do too, but Paul really does, and I certainly do. That's what I blame for this.
Yeah.
That's probably what I'm going to blame for.
The porn can get very blurry. The porn can get very blurry.
So, you know, I will say my grandmother, she's 88 years old, and she doesn't use glasses.
No?
No, she drinks straight from the bottle.
Lady!
Oh! Hey! Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, you know me, I get drunk on water as well as on land.
Oh!
I'm just saying that, you know, I don't drink anymore. You know, I don't drink any less.
Oh, my.
Sorry. See? You see what happens when you get these
guys? I know. See, yeah, that's, it's true.
Get these guys.
I like to say that I never drink before a show either, but once the curtain goes up, oh, it's all game.
It's a little something we have to look forward to. You know, Brett is ahead.
No. It's going to be much better than that. You I know, promise.
I got dark circles around my eyes, and the people said, how do you get those? And I said, well, they were caused by glasses. And they said, why don't you use contact lenses? I said, they don't hold enough scotch. Thank you.
We're Dan Sykes from Arizona. Doesn't know.
And we're out of time, Dan. Sorry.
We do meth in Arizona. That's what we do. Yeah.
Speaking of heat, my father moved to Arizona.
I'm sorry.
And he said, and my father is a old world Italian immigrant and a great guy. And he moved to Arizona, and he said, and he just got so tired of hearing the, it's a dry heat, it's a dry heat, it's a dry heat, it's a dry heat. So finally, after like the 1,000th time, he said, I got to use the F word, Michael, so you have to forgive me.
Oh, which F word would that be?
Because so he said, you know, it's okay, because even though it's 120, it's a dry heat. And my father, with his accent, goes, so is a fucking convection oven. It's like, that's a lot of truth to what
true.
That man said.
You still bake.
What? You still bake. Yeah, it doesn't matter. 120 is 120. Do you like the hot weather?
I...
Well, you're so wrapped in cashmere.
No. It's fall. It's supposed to change.
That's true.
You know. We were talking beforehand. I've been so spoiled now living in California for so long. It's like if it goes a degree above 80, I die.
I know.
I just want to kill myself immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know how. I'll go back home and it's like 120. I'm like, what is this? How do you do this? Yeah. Who are you people?
You get both things happen. Your blood gets thin for the cold when you come here, and the same thing with the heat. Like we went back to Chicago and people don't realize it. Everyone talks about the Chicago winters. The Chicago summers are more brutal than just about anywhere else.
I'm from Milwaukee, so I know it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know,
the muggy. It's like living in a swamp.
I know. It's just oppressive. You know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, Chicago winters are pretty nasty though, Paul. That Chicago wind coming off of that lake.
You get this thing that I tell you about, cab mirage. This is a phenomenon solely dedicated to Chicago. Cab mirage is when the wind chill is about 30 below. Everything coming down the street looks like a cab. It's like, that could be one. It's like, it's a guy on a bike. It could be one. It could be a rickshaw.
Hop on.
You do. Michael, I cut you off. You were talking about the show at the Getty, and do you have the information so we can share with people again to give it a little promo? Do I have it?
Actually, I can direct people there. Yeah, I mean, it's something that really people should see. It is... a classic story that was written, you know, many, many years ago, but it is simply called Helen. It takes place 17 years after the original Helen of Troy and the Trojan Horse, which was written by Euripides.
Right.
And they've done a brilliant thing. They've infused all of this modern kind of take on the show, yet keeping intact some of the original dialogue. And also the imagery of the show is very contemporary to kind of classic 40s, 30s, and beyond that, in this amazing amphitheater setting.
Yeah.
500 seats in this amphitheater. The lighting was spectacular. The orchestra, conducted by David O., who composed the score, was just perfect. And there were some specially created pieces of music for singing.
Maxwell Caulfield.
Sang, and Rachel Sorsa, who was spectacular as Helen in the title role there. And so clever that the biggest thing that I kept thinking throughout the play was that this is a perfect way to introduce young people to a classic piece of theater if they've never seen it before, because they will accept it in an entirely different way.
Right.
Means
makes it accessible.
To them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's funny, it's charming, it's serious, it's all of those things.
Well, and not just young people. I mean, there's a lot of people that haven't been exposed to Greek theater that
true.
Way.
Right.
And to see it in an amphitheater, that Getty Villa is just incredible to go to.
I didn't even know there was a venue up there.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there was a performance space up there.
Though they only do the classic performances once a year. That was you know, this particular run.
Does the main Getty off the 405, does that have a performance space? Or is it?
I don't think so. I think that they just have some sort of media, like a film space for
like
whatever
room,
exhibits.
Where they have some sort of readings and things, I think.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I think they actually, some sort of readings there. Oh. But not a performance space per se.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. But at any rate,
there's actually another venue where they just do scenes from the Golden Girls all over and over.
And where would that
That's
be?
That's the Estelle Getty Villa.
Oh,
man. It is www.gettyedu. That is the website.
Go to that website, get those tickets.
Stop me talking, Michael, and introduce our first guest so we can.
Golden Girls show.
Imagine the Estelle Getty Villa.
I will take you up on that.
Please do.
Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, received an Ovation Award nomination for his music from Liberty Inn, the musical. He also wrote the book for Darling, as well as the book, music, and lyrics for The Tavern Keeper's Daughter. His recent Los Angeles acting credits include the Center Theater Group's The Lieutenant of Inishmore at the Mark Taper Forum, The History Boys at the Amundsen Theater, and the world premieres of Dr.
Cerberus.
All right, almost had it. And the Prince of Atlantis for South Coast Repertory Theater in Orange County. Please welcome Brett Ryback.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. How much fun was Lieutenant of Inishmore?
Oh, it was too much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was a great time. I had never had to hang upside down and do an Irish accent and pretend to have my nipple cut off all at once before. In various stages, those three.
Well, not in your public life.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, that was a great time and a big bloody mess. And actually, I just was at the taper the other night seeing Red, which is a great performance.
Yes, I hear.
Similarly messy and red, but not quite as flooded.
I got to ask you something. I've been dying to talk to someone who was in the production because I was curious about one thing when I saw it, because there's a bit at the end with the cat.
Yeah.
You probably get this question. Were there any times where the bit with the cat went south, or was it always pretty much...
It never went terribly south. There were a lot of times when the cat did not want to eat the food.
Okay. Would you explain to the people what took
place? Oh, sure. Yeah.
So the
whole premise of the play is that this mad man who works as a paramilitary in Ireland as part of the INLA. He's actually a splintered off of the INLA, which is a paramilitary group during the Troubles in Ireland. And... He finds out that his cat has been brutally murdered, and so he goes home to avenge its death, and begins this bloodbath of just killing everybody indiscriminately. It's very funny, by the way. It doesn't sound very funny, but it is very, very, very funny.
He doesn't find out it's dead till later, right? They get him to come home because he thinks it's sick at first.
Well, yes, that is true. His father, having found the dead cat. doesn't want to upset him too much, and so tells him it's just sick, which actually reminds me of the joke about, there's a joke about, you call me up and tell me my cat's sick, you should prepare me, you should tell me the cat's on the roof, it doesn't want to come down, has it eaten, and then tell me it's died, and he goes, well, that's all right, I have some bad other news, your grandma's on the roof and she doesn't want to come down. Anyway, in this story, he goes, he kills all these people, and then at the end of the play, once everybody, including him, is dead, a live cat walks in to the house, and you realize that his cat wasn't dead at all. And so, so the trick is getting a live cat to do that, and it's a spectacular effect. And, you basically just kind of train it for a couple days during previews to not be afraid of people and the lights and to go to its food bowl. And most of the time it doesn't want to do that. It wants to get the heck out of there. And then not only there's that aspect of it, but then getting it down in the dark is the job of the guy who plays the father. So he has to literally reach towards a frightened animal in the dark, and he got clawed many a time. He and that cat were not the best of friends.
This is the reason that you don't see any trained cat shows. Like, you always see the trained dogs and birds and all this, but no one does cats jumping through hoops or balancing beach balls.
They don't want to participate.
No, because, dogs have owners, cats have staff. That was the best way I ever heard it put.
Yeah.
Heard it put quite that way, but I guess you're right? Mm. Well, I didn't get to see it, Brett, but I know it was a fabulous production, right?
It was, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And what about the History Boys?
That was also a fabulous production. Yeah. No, that was a really great time. That was sort of my first Yeah, that was my first time in L.A. proper working as an actor. And they basically remounted the production that was on Broadway and at the National Theater. They had a director, Paul Miller, from the National Theater come out to remount Nick Heitner's staging. We had their sets. We had their lighting designers, their costume designers, their composers, their movement coaches all come out and work with us, a team of mostly Los Angeles-based young actors. And, I mean, I really could not have had a better L.A. debut, because that show, you know, the bonds that form when you're in any show, let alone a show with, you know, what was it, like eight boys who are playing school-age kids. I mean, I'm still very close with a lot of those actors, and it's just great to see us, because we were all at the beginning of our careers at that time, and so to sort of grow together and see what everybody's doing. And you know, we've had people now. One of our boys was just in War Horse on Broadway, and another one playing in Wicked on Broadway. Those are two of the New York actors.
Nice.
And it was that was an incredible show to be a part of.
It's great to follow that stuff. I don't think a lot of people who haven't done shows and understand the level of camaraderie that you get, because, you know, just being out on the ice with other people is it's pure vulnerability. You have to be yourself. You can't put on airs. You're all in the trenches together. I saw that production of War Horse at Lincoln Center.
Yes.
My friend Lena Rideout was in it. She was Little Joey. She worked Little Joey, and then she did a couple of roles later. She got blown up as a soldier because they used the women primarily as the soldiers that were on the puppets that were carried by other people. But that was pretty spectacular.
Yeah. Really. Oh, yeah. That was.
And then, of course, we got to go up on stage with her and see the actual puppets up close.
That stage is massive.
Cool. It is. And people are just like, oh, it's, you know.
Unbelievable.
They see it, and it's like, oh, well, it's not that big, you know. And it's like, no, because the whole thing is turning. So, you know, you're only seeing the first third of the pie at any given time. Then you go up there, and you go back, and it's just sort of like, it's like a football field.
And the way that the production, if you haven't seen it, is done is it's there's no backdrop. It's just darkness. Mm-hmm. And so at any given point, you see these things emerge from the darkness, and when they go into the war, suddenly there are like tanks coming out, and you're like, where are these things coming from?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It was like the when I saw the Cirque du Soleil show.
Of course,
and a guy walks, because the bottom of the pool will drop like 15 or 30 feet depending on their needs.
Ah.
So first a guy walks out onto the thing, you know, just walks across the water, and there's a little piece of paper. You think it's a little piece of paper, and he grabs onto it and he lifts it up. It's not a piece of paper. It's the top of a 25-foot sailboat. So it just sort of like lifts it up, and then all of a sudden this entire, you know, clipper ship thing comes up out of the water. I love stuff like that.
I know. Have you
know.
Seen the one in Hollywood at the Kodak yet?
No. No, I haven't. What's the name of it?
Iris.
Iris. Oh, the film one, yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you, I might not go see that just because of how obnoxious the guy who promotes it is when you're at the Kodak Theater.
Oh, right.
Because he's in your face wherever you go, and he's doing this like Charlie Chaplin walk, and it's just like, no, just want a burger. Thanks.
It's a permanent attraction. Yeah. The company owns.
I didn't
the
realize
theater.
That.
Yeah.
Oh, they do. Oh, yeah. I didn't realize that either. Yeah.
Cirque du Soleil bought the Kodak.
Yes.
Oh my
their own
God.
Shows.
Heaven.
And it's digital? You know, it's doing business. It's probably could do better business, but it is doing business.
Holy so now at the Oscars, they're going to pull the envelope out of the water.
Exactly. Right, exactly. We have an audio track here of Brett's. It's called I Must Be in L.A. Can you tell us about it?
So this is
we'll give it a listen?
Yeah, this is a song that I wrote for a web series that was on called The Batteries Down. A guy named Jake Wilson put it together in New York and asked a lot of young, up-and-coming, and also well-established composers to contribute songs to the piece. And as part of the series, he moved, the beginning of the second season, he moved to Los Angeles and so asked me to write a song for him, and this is him singing it.
He's singing it, not
He's
you.
Singing it, not
oh,
me,
okay.
yes.
Okay,
yeah.
So we'll give it a listen.
Yes.
I Must Be in L.A.
There's sun on my face, it's shining its beams, it's dirty and warm, this must be a dream. The people heading to work are wearing sandals and suits, girls in bikinis are smiling, saying, baby, you're cute. I've either died and gone away, or else I must be in L.A.
blowing kisses. Hello to all the famous and rich. The boulevard is my home and TMZ is my bitch. There's a sign on the hill and there are stars at my feet. I'm watching Elvis high five the trannies walking the street. I'm either seeing Judgment Day or else I must be in L.A.
Oh, that's hysterical.
That's
and now
great.
We see.
And so accurate.
Yes.
And so accurate.
That's so accurate.
And I should say that was Casey Levy singing the L.A. part. She's now the lead in Ghost on Broadway right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. She's got
pipes. Which is closing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is closing.
Which is closing,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
Sadly, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear. But a clever lyrics.
Yes, very funny.
By a clever man.
Yes.
Because Brett has a great sense of humor, so... That's cool. And will we, you know, he's going to be headlining my supper club. Did you know that?
I did not know
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
It's not in any of the stuff.
Oh,
I did
yes,
not know
it is.
That. Where
yeah,
is it?
It is. It's there.
Where?
It's it. There's a sheet for it.
There's a sheet
for it? You've got to look through it. You've got to look through your stuff, man.
Oh, okay. No, wasn't it?
This is why we come to rehearsal, Paul.
Wasn't it?
I'm so drunk.
I'm so drunk. I've been drinking since 11.
Oh, last night started late.
And well, I'm yeah. sorry, Michael, what supper club would that be?
Wow.
This wouldn't be Sterling's upstairs at the Federal, would it?
I think so.
It's a magical place.
That would be the
one. It's a magical place where unicorns fly out your butt. It's
well, funny you should say unicorns. I'm actually singing about unicorns next Sunday at my show. I'm not kidding. I really am. They're not going to fly out of anybody's butt, though, I hope.
You're just not trying hard enough.
That's true. If only I had the budget that Warhorse did.
Exactly. Sunday, the 16th of September, Brett will be headlining at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal in North Hollywood, and he's bringing in a fabulous show, appropriately titled The Kid with the Keys.
The Kid with the Keys.
The Kid with the Keys.
And I got to correct you, Michael. I got nothing about the show here.
Really?
You didn't give me nothing.
Really? You didn't see anything.
It doesn't
like
matter because we don't. What?
Like
I do not have that.
Wow. Then you know what? Here, you can take mine.
It's okay.
There you go.
So I will alert people to it because I'm so well-versed. And as everyone knows, Sterling Upstairs at the Federal is 5303 Lancashire Boulevard. It's right next to the El Portal there. And the show Sunday, September 16th. It's 5:30 to 6 o'clock for your dinner seating. 7 o'clock showtime. Reservation only. 818-754-8700. As I always say, have the fish and chips.
Yes, you
it's
do.
Good fish and chips there.
It is. I had it for the first time about 2 weeks ago, and I agree.
Isn't it good?
Yeah.
Very,
very
good. Those are the English peas and everything?
Yeah.
So I got to ask you about this for your show. I always ask people this question when they do shows of this ilk.
Yeah.
How do you have a narrative? Do you start with a narrative? Do the songs dictate the story that you tell? How do you? I'm always curious how people arrive at the content.
This one, this was more of a theme based. The theme came to me first, which was I wanted to include a lot of music from my contemporaries who are also writing musical theater, and I also have annually written for a program in Milwaukee, which is my hometown, called Kids Rights, that takes the uncorrected lyrics of school children, and I set them to music. And so I wanted
I'm sorry, uncorrected?
Yes, so if they spell something wrong, such as, you know, future becomes fulture, they say it fulture. They don't correct, they don't change anything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so I wanted to do something that involved youth and young people creating art. And so I came up with this idea of Kid with the Keys, which is, you know, me as a kid. And so it kind of went from there, and I tell stories of my own childhood and how I came to you know, be an artist and then sing songs that kind of help tell that story.
Okay.
Yeah.
I ask that question a lot, Michael, but it always fascinates me because it's like a creative process that a lot of people who aren't familiar with you know, performances of that type, they think these things spring fully formed out of the earth. You just go up there and stand in front of a microphone and sing songs or whatever. People don't realize because it's not, you know, it's not a scripted form.
It's a little more freeform.
Yeah. And right. I'm always curious about
that. And he comes at it from he's written it and you're singing it, and he's also a marvelous musical director for other acts in town. Leslie Margarita in particular.
Yes,
frequently. You just finished working
we
with
just,
her, right?
We just did one of her All Hail the Queen shows, a new version of it, actually, at the end of August at the Supper Club LA, which was fantastic.
Leslie Margarita could be the sexiest woman on the planet. Yes. I am convinced that she is the sexiest woman, because we had her in here and just like the energy that comes off her. Is just
she could be, but her shirt holds her back. I hope you heard that, Leslie.
We'll send her that soundbite.
Thank you.
Again, Brett Ryback at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal on Sunday, September 16th. Reservations only, ladies and gentlemen, 818-754-8700.
And we will play the rest of I Must Be in L.A. off the air at the end of the show.
Yes, indeed.
So, but stay where you are. We're going to pay the bills with our little arts calendar here, and then we'll continue talking to both of our guests.
Yes. All right. So, Paul.
Yes, you want to kick off the arts calendar for us, Michael?
Wonderful production
Please
in town,
do.
So I hear. I have not yet seen it, but I know the folks that are putting it on. And it's All the King's Men, adapted by Adrian Hall, based on the novel by Robert Penn Warren and directed by David Sierzanowski, from the wildly popular and critically acclaimed West Coast premiere of The Spidey Project. It's on stage through September 15th at the historic El Portal Theater in North Hollywood. Man is conceived in sin and born in corruption. There is always something. These are the words of Willie Stark in Robert Penn Warren's Pulitzer Prize-winning classic, All the King's Men. And although it was written in 1946, Warren's story of secrets and the misuse of power extends much deeper than the political arena, and it remains as relevant today as ever. For more information, please visit NOLA. N-O-L-A Productions, and that's shortened, NOLAPRODS.com. And for tickets, call 866-811-4111.
That's like it's the Huey Long story, isn't it? Isn't it Huey Long story? Thinly veiled Huey Long story. It is time again for our State of the Art sweepstakes, sponsored by Breakdown Services. Each week, we'll raffle off a different prize to a fan of State of the Arts. Prizes are furnished by Breakdown Services and include free yearly subscriptions to Casting About, casting agent directories, which is what our prize is today, Michael. We're giving away a casting agent directory, free video uploads for actors, headshot retouching, and even a free year of unlimited submissions on Actors Access. To enter, all you have to do is like us on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/stateoftheartsLA. So shall we give the wheel a spin and announce today's winner, Michael?
Yes.
Okay,
indeed.
So here we go.
Oh, there it goes. Round and round.
We got to get a better sound effect. That's the most anemic wheel.
Again,
we only had one baseball card when I was a kid to put in the spokes of our tires.
Sorry.
But it still worked.
It still worked.
Because today's winner, ladies and gentlemen, is Shane Graham, an actor from San Antonio, Texas, who now resides in New York City. Shane, if you're listening, you'll receive a casting agent directory.
Yes.
Phenomenal piece of material that you must have. And congratulations. We will also alert you through our Facebook page.
Yes, okay? We will. And we're very delighted for that. So. I just had to throw that in.
That's okay. Yes,
I'm so enthused.
He's from Texas.
Okay, let's get to our next guest, who's been so patient sitting here. Our next guest, an award-winning actor, is currently starring in The Paris Letter at the Lonnie Chapman Theater in North Hollywood. Production from the Group Repertory Theater there. The Paris Letter focuses on a Wall Street power broker who gets caught up in a financial scheme that threatens to expose his extramarital gay affairs, sending his perfectly calibrated life dangerously off kilter. Written by Pulitzer Prize-nominated and Tony-nominated playwright and screenwriter John Robin Bates, creator of TV's Brothers and Sisters, please welcome one of the stars of The Paris Letter, Mr. Dan Sykes.
There we go.
Did I tell you it'd be better? You know? Because, you know, we could have done that, or we could have done this magical one.
Mix them together.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
So now, telling people about The Paris Letter, to jump right into it, they're lucky they're going to be able to see, because you said it was extended.
Yeah, we just got extended for, we were supposed to close this past Sunday, and but we were lucky enough, the show's been doing well enough that we got extended for a couple of extra weekends, and so yeah, it's going strong. We had the John Robin Bates actually came out a couple of weeks ago, and we had a special performance just for him. And
that's great.
Yeah, that really helped us out.
That's great.
The Center Theater Group did this production in 2005 at the Kirk Douglas Theater.
Yes.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, with Neil Patrick Harris
and Josh also Radner.
Josh Radnor, Patricia Wettig was in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it got rave reviews then, as it's getting now.
Yeah.
Dan was actually, we were talking about earlier, because I remember that one too. And I think that one of the reasons that this production is doing so well is I believe the earlier production, the reviews were a little on the mixed side.
They were a little dicey. The show was also about 3.5 hours long or something beforehand.
Oh, really?
And so through his process and the other shows, it eventually got cut down to about 2 hours, which is the script that's available now. And, you know, we pace it to be 2 hours long, but I think that was like a deal about it before.
That's a big difference.
When you're going at
now, did he say,
the
did
length
he,
of Titanic.
Did the playwright say anything to you about that change when he came to see the show about what... I'm always curious if people are willing to share that part of their creative process.
Well, he talked about what the show was like before it went up, and it was supposed to be a completely different thing. We have a scene involving myself and a psychiatrist when my character is trying to not become gay anymore. He's trying to not be a homosexual. And originally the show was about the psychiatrist. It was supposed to be a whole show instead of this one scene that he's in. But he didn't really tell us what has been cut. We were really interested of what was originally in the show and what's cut out, just for our own interest.
I wonder if that script is available.
It has to be somewhere.
That
in
would
some
be a
basement.
Fascinating study to put those side by side, wouldn't it?
Yes.
You know, because I mean, you always like I always think like, when you watch DVDs and you see the deleted scenes and all that, about 75% of the time, you totally can see why they were removed. You know, just like, that's not really...
Well, I must say, Jules Aaron, who directed your production, who's a fantastic director, mm-hmm. very innovative. But I have a question, because I'm a little confused on something. The scene, the famous scene here that's in your show, now, was that in the original show? And I'm going to explain what that means in a second, but I'm just asking you kind of...
The psychiatrist scene?
No.
The naked scene?
The naked scene.
I was going to say, there's a smile creeping across his face. He knows where you're going with this, Michael.
I just wanted to see if he could get it out. He seemed a little scared to say it.
No.
Is that why he's naked next to me right now? I wasn't sure what that was about.
I didn't want to say anything.
It's Thursday here.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that's how it's written in the script, that is how it's been done, as I've been
told. We have to talk about it, because how do you feel as an actor? I mean, when you... obviously, this isn't something that comes across in every play. It's not there. It's a choice that you either make as a person and an actor, or one or the other, perhaps.
Personally, for me, as long as the script justifies it, as long as it fits in the show, I'm not about to just be, well, take off your pants, go ahead. You know, I'm like, okay. You know, that's not how I do it. If it fits the story, if it's important for the show, then yeah. I did Equus a number of years ago.
Yes.
And that was 20 minutes of nudity.
So it's kind of your thing.
Yeah, exactly.
do you shows where you keep your pants on?
Wow.
It's the market that I'm trying to corner. We all have
niche.
Our things.
It's a niche market.
Exactly. It's on my special skills.
As is the funny thing, a horrible dancer. That's what's on his skills.
Because actually, I saw a production of Equus with Estelle Getty. And that was really difficult.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
It was at the Estelle Getty Villa?
It was at the Estelle Getty Villa. I'm sorry.
But before or after Golden Girls?
No, the reason I bring it up is because it actually works. It's rather long, longer than
the
expected.
Scene? Is that what
the
you're
lady?
Talking about?
Just like,
and he's not the only one. It's the gentleman that plays opposite him.
Alex Parker, my co-star, I walk on stage and I get dressed right away. He's walking.
Well, you don't get dressed right away.
Yeah, well, by my standards, yeah.
Okay, but he's hanging.
Michael's got a notepad with a timestamp on it. What is that?
Because it wasn't one of those fleeting kind of glimpses. It wasn't. It was a scene that was conducted like that.
Wow.
And Dan did get dressed sooner than the other gentleman, and I kind of felt bad for the other gentleman in some sort of way.
Don't feel bad for him at all.
All right.
Never feel bad for
did
Alex
he do
Parker.
Equus too?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Right.
So he's got to earn his stripes.
My friend Kevin Tice from Chicago, great actor from Chicago. We were in college and he did a production of Curse of the Starving Class, a Sam Shepard play. And he has to come out on stage and pick up a sheep and carry the sheep off. Well, first of all, he comes on stage naked and he picks up this sheep, a live sheep, carries it off, and then he comes back and he's completely covered in blood because he slaughtered the sheep on stage. But the jarring scene is when he just does this incredibly long cross to go naked to pick up this sheep and carry it up. And he said, you know, it wasn't difficult to do because it was so gradual and that the audience sort of got acclimated to it. Even by the time I was on stage, the audience was acclimated to it. Unless you have an elderly theater patron who is in the front row, whose nose is buried in her program until you are directly in front of her about 3 feet away, and you get this. Oh, my God! Like, completely shouted out. And he's like, that was a long walk back. It was a long walk.
Well, I'm curious about what, because I've never had to be fully naked on stage. What is the how do you get to that point? I mean, how do you warm to that point?
Well, for this show, we pretty much were doing the scene in our underwear for mm-hmm. the entire rehearsal process. And Jules, the great thing about Jules was, you know, he offered to take his clothes off while we were doing it. And we're like, no.
Oh, isn't
no,
that kind
no,
of
no,
Jules.
Please.
Yeah. You know, that happens to me at every audition. Every audition I go to.
He must work a lot.
Right? That's how he gets all his work. He is going to kill me. We did it all in our boxers and, you know, as tidy whities, whatever mm-hmm. we could find. And so we just got really used to that. And then he waited until we had lights in the set and
right.
everything like that. And and then it came off. And then that was the first time that I was like, man, Alex is naked for a long time. He is just, I'm sitting here fully clothed and he is still naked and bending
just,
over.
Wow. Just naked and naked and naked.
Did you do any sort of landscaping, manscaping?
Well,
are you vain like that? Because I would have.
See, it did enter my mind. We had a gentleman's agreement because it takes place, our scene takes place in the 60s.
Ah.
And that was kind of before the whole thing. So we just agreed that no manscaping would go on.
And I tell you, I could never do that show because the manscaping that is required after I turn 40, you put sunblock on my back, it's like trying to get peanut butter out of a shag carpet.
And we've been in this since May, so it's been a while.
Yeah. You know, I must say this in all due respect. The scene. I know, kind of hits you about 5 minutes later.
It's actually that true, but it's a great line, isn't it? That's Monica. I'm very well maintained.
The scene did not detour from the wonderfulness of this play. I thought it was a wonderfully written play and certainly very well acted, not only by yourself, but everybody else on stage. It's really riveting to see what happens to people who, when they're struggling with their identity of or admission of who they know they really are, mm-hmm. but they just simply refuse to let it surface and be, you know, let them breathe through the rest of life, if you will, and what it can do to you, you know, and in the case of this gentleman, you're playing the younger version of him.
Yeah, and we've had a large older gay audience come and see this, and right. they will talk to them afterwards, and we've had some people just in tears because they say I went through this. Or my friends went through this back in the 60s and 70s, and when you know you were something was wrong with you, we have to go and fix you, we have to go and cure you,
right.
And it's heartbreaking.
That's fascinating because I always wonder about people that have endured hardships that while we still endure them now, whether it's if you're gay or a racial issue, if you're prejudiced or things like that, different types of prejudices. I always wonder about how people feel, how older generations feel, if they're envious of even the quasi-tolerance that exists now, if they're envious of that. It's like, you know, do they feel like they paved the way, or do they feel like, why do you get this and I don't? And I suppose that's up to the individual.
My older character has a line at the end of the show when he's talking to his former lover, and he says, you know,
you play the same character later, older?
No. There's a different actor that plays the older version of me.
Oh, okay. Larry Eisenberg.
Eisenberg. Yeah. But he says to his former lover, who is now the same age as him, he's like, you were right. The whole world's gay now, and it's fine. You know?
No.
And if I had just lived my life, you know, who knows what would have happened. Instead, he went on to go and have a family and try to lead a normal life like he was trained to do. Yeah.
Wow. That's so sadly, too. Yeah. Yeah. With the letter, of course.
Yeah. Lots of slapstick.
Yeah, sure. The other thing I wanted to say, too, something we touched on earlier. We've made jokes and had fun with the whole nudity aspect. But it's important to stress, especially with shows like this, is that nudity, I was going to say nudity and titillation. That was the hybrid of those two. Nudity does not equal always titillation. And in the case of a play like this, I'm sure it's more an intimacy device. It's more to put you in the room with those two actors and really feel as though I felt that way in the scene in Shortcuts where who is the actress who played red hair? She's in Shortcuts. She took over the Jodie Foster role in the sequel to Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, Julianne Moore.
Yeah. She has a scene in Shortcuts where it's probably an 8-minute monologue, and she is just naked from the waist down for the whole thing. You know, she's wearing like a man's shirt. And she just and the scene is just really captivating, and it's not because of the nudity. It's just because you really feel like you're sitting in the room with those people, just because of the vulnerability factor of the actor, and it's and you're to be applauded for it because it's not
and I think
easy
so
to
too.
Do.
Thank
and
you.
Obviously,
and,
there's a moment of shock.
Right. Course, yeah. It's
with the audience,
just
but
walk out naked.
The way that it's
yeah.
the way that it's treated, the way that it's directed. It's yeah. it you know it. As Paul said, you actually
yeah,
just feel you're there.
Two people that get in a fight after they've just got finished having sex. Of course you're going to be naked. We've all been there.
But do you
right?
have to wear the swim fins, though? Do you have to wear the swim fins?
Some people are into that, Paul.
Exactly.
And the propeller beanie was very distracting.
I know.
You know.
I know.
Homosexuality
the
in the 60s.
Speaks with experience. Get right back.
I think that is my favorite line of the day. You have to wear the swim fins? It was the 60s. Oh, that's
Tell
funny.
Us about some of the other wonderful projects that you've done, because I asked you before we went on air that where you were from exactly. I was a little confused because I saw North Carolina and then Arizona, but
yeah,
you're from Arizona. You were schooled in North
from
Carolina.
From Arizona originally. Went to North Carolina School for the Arts for just a brief flash of time, and then I've lived in L.A. for about 8 years now. Out here, I've got lucky enough to do Mozart and Amadeus. This previous year, I got to play Ty Cobb in a play called Cobb, which was a ton of fun for me because I'm a huge baseball fan
yeah.
and theater lover. So that was just a...
That was also at the Group Repertory Theater.
Yeah, yeah. I was at the start of this season. And then Shakespeare, I have some friends that have a Shakespeare company called the Porters of Hell's Gate, which are mounting Measure for Measure coming up in the next month or so. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, things, whatever comes my way.
Do either of you have websites, by the way? Do you have websites that we can let alert people to?
www.brettryback.com.
Okay. And do you have one?
I do not have my own personal website, but... Can lead you to thegrouprep.com.
There we go. Grouprep.com. Okay.
Yes. And while we're speaking of the group rep, we probably should give people the information that they need to go and see the show. Once again, it has been extended through September 16th. However, it is dark tomorrow night. Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, it is.
September 7th.
Yes.
And it plays Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m. at the Lonnie Chapman Theater, which is in North Hollywood, 10900 Burbank Boulevard. Very, very easy to find.
It's been there forever, too.
It has. And so, you know what? It's a wonderful theater. It's a wonderful space to sit in. It's comfortable. The chairs are comfortable. The stage is a great size.
It's a great venue. Don't let the industrial nature of the hood throw
yeah, well, exactly.
you. There's a smog.
You can get your car fixed across the street.
But when you get inside, it's this little oasis there. It's a wonderful place. Wonderful
Indeed
place.
It is. And,
yes.
and very, very well run and beautifully respected. The place is always immaculate, and mm-hmm. I appreciate those kinds
they,
of things.
They take a lot of care of
they
that.
They do,
yeah.
indeed. All theater companies should be that conscientious. So for reservations, ladies and gentlemen, or tickets, as it were, we said it earlier, Dan just said it, thegrouprep.com, or you can call 818-763-5990. Tickets are very, very reasonably priced. It's a wonderful evening of theater. Ample street parking and early bird parking lot is available because they have their own lot adjacent to the theater.
Yes, yeah. they do.
And also in my notes here, it says if you don't wear pants, it's 2-for-1.
Oh, there you go.
So,
well, you see,
just so, you
always
know.
Thinking of other people.
You know,
group
they're,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, congratulations on your performance. And
waiting for Saturday night now. Half the audience without pants on.
I heard it.
I think that's a good thing for the group rep. The group rep, it's a group thing.
Yes, yes.
And now I don't have to imagine everything.
Can you imagine the blue hairs without the pants?
No,
I was told I heard it on the radio, and I want it honored. I want this special.
Jules will be first in line to do that.
The early bird special.
We have 5 minutes. Shall we baptize our guests?
We have to.
Gentlemen, what we talked about in the lobby, Michael and I, at the end of every show, we always like to ask people about a performance disaster or something funny that went wrong, either on stage or performing in any way. So I don't know if you guys
have
something
on top of
to chew
head?
On it. But,
if you want to go first.
All right.
All right, Brett's going first.
Well, yeah, this isn't exactly funny, but I was just working at... I mean, it was a terrible ordeal.
My friend was killed.
No, I was just working in Palo Alto doing a play called Upright Grand, which involved a turntable as part of the set. And this turntable had a history in other shows of being very uncooperative. And the director assured us, you know, that it was going to all work out fine, and so fine that we didn't even come up with a contingency plan for what would happen if the turntable didn't work. As it did one day, just literally just before we were about to go on, suddenly we were holding the house. The computer had melted down, literally melted down, and they spent the next 40... This was the stupid part. They spent the next 45 minutes trying to fix it. Like, at minute 10, don't you just go, we just need to figure this out? They didn't end up fixing it. So we started 45 minutes late, and we just had to put all of the furniture that we would ever need in any of the scenes downstage in the two corners. Two pieces of which were near full-sized replicas of a grand piano and an upright grand piano that were just kind of like tucked away. It was like an attic production of the show.
You just reminded me of a terrible old Borscht Belt joke.
Uh-oh.
Which is, you know, we wanted a rising orchestra pit, but we couldn't get a rising orchestra pit, so we just paid the musicians to stand up slowly.
That's about right. Exactly. Yes, that's about right.
Oh, that's funny. That's very funny.
Oh, my.
So you had to take all the scenes and just play them
all down.
Like a three-camera shoot.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. And the lighting didn't work for any of it.
I guess it wouldn't.
No. Yeah, you don't think about that until you're standing in the dark. Yeah.
Why did they keep lighting that coat tree?
Exactly.
You all just everybody on stage just have like a blank look on their face. You know, like, what is happening now?
Yeah, or, yeah. We just all kind of. I mean, you pull through it, and of course, right. You know, the audience tends to go with you in those sort of panic moments. But
They're just happy you delivered the show. They're happy you delivered the show. And they have more of a story than the person who...
Exactly.
Dan, you got one first? You got 3 minutes.
Yeah, when you asked me, it actually reminded me of what I was doing in this show. Because before you were asking me about the nudity and it not being... And we were talking about if it's embarrassing or anything. During the week of previews for this, when I did walk out on stage for it... Anton, who plays my lover that we're getting in a fight, he comes up and he tries to touch me on the back, and I walk away from him all like, no, don't touch me, don't talk to me, blah, blah, blah. And that's exactly how I do it in the show, too. but so I walk away in a hussy, and I wasn't paying attention, and
I think
we're
it's
on
a hissy.
This hissy, that's what I meant, or in a hussy, whatever. And we're on this raised platform, and I wasn't watching where I was going, and I completely just biffed it off this platform.
Oh my
just
God.
Bam.
Oh, man.
So walking on stage, acting on stage, naked, not a thing for me at all. Falling flat on my face while completely bare-ass naked, completely embarrassing, humiliating.
Yeah, because you can't...
And dangerous, you could hurt yourself.
Could have hurt a few things.
You can't, you can't fall, you know, cool anyway. You know, there's no way to fall and look like pull it off.
Right.
When you go completely down this road, like you can't shake it off.
Especially, and when you walk off the stage at that, too.
And trying to shake it off naked? Impossible.
No, because you shake a lot of other things off right. when you do. So.
And you got to be careful about what you do. But how did the audience react to that?
Well, there weren't too many people there, and it was just, I heard... somebody said, oh, I thought it was part of it. Oh. And then, but then there was like this split second where after that girl said that, and then I just heard, and then I hear, are you okay? And I was like, yep, we're in previews.
And
it's
no,
fine.
But in no it's, road rash, no scrapes or cuts or
I
anything?
I cut my toe.
Okay.
Yeah.
But nothing like,
but nothing,
you know.
Nothing bad, no.
Okay. Because yeah. You know what I was really asking.
I know, yeah.
Hazard
yeah.
pay.
It was all right.
Hazard
yeah,
pay.
Right. Yeah.
One more time, ladies and gentlemen, Dan Sykes in the Paris Letter at the Lonnie Chapman Theater, at the Group Repertory Theater, the Lonnie Chapman in North Hollywood, and it's playing through the 16th of September, and you can get tickets by going to theGroupRep.com or by calling 818-763-5990. Brett Ryback at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal on the 16th of September, and you can call for reservations to hear this amazing young artist do his live show, singing all of his music and music of other wonderful composers like himself, 818-754-8700.
Gentlemen, it's been a joy having you on. It was a really great
Likewise,
time.
Likewise, yeah.
I hope you guys enjoyed yourself.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
We're going to have Brett play us off.
We are going to do that, and Michael, as always, I look forward to chatting
you,
with
Paul.
You next week.
Thank you. See you on the radio.
Wait, I don't know what I'm saying. This is not who I am. This is not what I want. I belong in New York. Everything I've ever known is 3,000 miles away. But relax, take a breath, think of Sunday in the park. It's okay to move on and besides, look around. If this is your new life, you're gonna be okay.
Listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.